Keep up to date with the past on the 100 Years Ago Show with Mark Stein.
A coup in Fiume, a youth league in Germany, and a lady in the House of Lords. It's March 1922.
100 years from today.
Your world news update. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues. The Free State of Fiume has existed in an inlet of the Eastern Adriatic for some 18 months now, until fascist leaders began shelling government headquarters. The president of the Fiume, Riccardo Zanella, was given 3 minutes to agree to surrender to the putsch leader, Giovanni Giuriati. President Zanella did so. Signor Giuriati is a fascist party member of the Italian Chamber of Deputies, and although the Free State of the Fiume is recognised by Great Britain, France and the United States, its new ruler intends to have it reincorporated into the Kingdom of Italy. The Russian Soviet Federative Socialist Republic has reversed its previous position. Georgi Chicherin, the foreign minister, has told famine relief officials that the Bolsheviks have agreed to honour the international debts incurred by the Russian Empire. The Soviet government has signed a commercial treaty with the Kingdom of Sweden. The devil makes work for idle hands, and that's particularly true of young lads, so a political party in Germany has come up with a way to keep them occupied. The rising National Socialist German Workers' Party is launching its own Jugendbund, a youth league divided into three sections, one for boys aged 14 to 16, another for boys 16 to 18, and a third section for girls. The French administrators of the new Mandate of Syria have announced the creation of an autonomous state for members of the Druze religion. No such luck for religious minorities in Canada following new laws on the regulation of schools within Mennonite communities in Manitoba and Saskatchewan. Thousands of members of that Christian sect have decided to leave Canada for Mexico. The first train of migrating Mennonites has now departed from the railway station at Plum Coulee, Manitoba. The 14th Canadian Parliament has been opened in Ottawa by the Governor-General, Lord Byng. It is the first three-party House of Commons since the very first Parliament in 1867, which included not just Liberals and Conservatives, but members of the Anti-Confederation Party. The new third party is the Progressive Party. The new Prime Minister is the Liberal leader, Mr. Mackenzie King. The legislators of Montreal, by contrast, have nowhere to meet. The handsome five-storey City Hall, built in 1891 in the Second Empire style at a cost of over $1 million, has been all but completely destroyed by a fire. Only the outer wall remains. When the late Lord Rondo was raised to a viscountcy, a condition of his acceptance, bluntly stated to His Majesty the King, was that it should pass by special remainder to his daughter Margaret, a survivor of the Lusitania and a well-known suffragette who was briefly jailed for putting a chemical bomb in a postbox. The second Viscountess Rhonda is a woman of strong opinions, but should the House of Lords have to listen to them? Lady Rhonda has sued under the Sex Disqualification Removal Act of 1919 to sit in their lordship's house, and the Committee for Privileges and Conduct has ruled in her favour. It appears she will be the first lady member of the House of Lords. Edwina Ashley is the 20-year-old great-granddaughter of the Earl of Shaftesbury and the granddaughter of the Jewish financier Sir Ernest Castle, who died last year, leaving her £2 million and a palatial London residence, Brook House in Park Lane. By contrast, Lord Louis Mountbatten is a Royal Navy lieutenant living on a salary of a mere £610 a year. However, his godmother and great-grandmother was Queen Victoria, and he is said to be favoured by his cousin the King. So Miss Ashley has announced her engagement to Lord Louis, and the couple will marry this summer. In the United States, the government has formally declined to participate in the upcoming Genoa Economic and Financial Conference. A group of female newspaper reporters has founded what it calls the New York Newspaper Woman's Club.
For I'm a jazz vampire. Shake a foot with me and dance, dance. Dancing is my specialty. Wise men keep bottom away. They know I lead them astray. They fall the minute I sway. I insist you can't resist a jazz vampire.
We're all familiar with jazz vampires, those forward young ladies of a modern disposition who can seduce you with their fast ways and infest so many American cities. Many of us recall Theda Bara vamping on the picture screens in A Fool There Was just 6 years ago. But what about non-jazz vampires, vampires who bite you in the neck and suck your blood? Well, the first vampire picture has been unveiled before an invited audience at the theatre in the Berlin Zoological Gardens. It is called Nosferatu and is said to be a great success, notwithstanding its similarities to the 1897 novel Dracula by Bram Stoker, whose heirs might want to think about enforcing his copyright. The Cradle, starring Ethel Clayton and Charles Meredith, is the new picture sensation in America. It tells the story of a child who spends half the year with each of his two divorced parents and of the toll it takes. You may prefer Sherlock Holmes, which stars John Barrymore as the famous detective. The show business paper Variety has launched a new feature. A ranking of the most popular dramatic pictures in the United States is compiled from receipts in New York and other selected cities. The first number one film in America is Foolish Wives, directed by Eric von Stroheim. Will Hayes has resigned as U.S. Postmaster General and quit the cabinet to become chairman of the new Motion Picture Producers and Distributors of America. If you're worried about all the vamping women and debauched men on screen and off, Mr. Hayes intends to hose down the sewer. The potentialities of the moving picture for moral influence and education are limitless, he told reporters, and therefore its integrity should be protected as we protect the integrity of our churches. What a glittering city is Detroit, home not only to America's automotive industry, but also now to the so-called million-dollar ballroom. The Greystone Ballroom has opened its doors, and stunned patrons marveled at a spectacular dance floor that can hold 3,000 people.
When life seems full of clouds and rain, and I am full of nothing and pain, who soothes my thumping, bumping brain? Nobody. When winter comes with snow and sleet, and me with hunger and cold feet, who says here's 25 cents? Go ahead and get something to eat. Nobody. But I ain't ever done nothing to nobody. I ain't ever gotten nothing to nobody in no time. Until I get something from somebody sometime. But I'll never never do nothing for nobody, no time.
There was nobody like Burt Williams, the great vaudevillian who, in the words of Booker T. Washington, smiled his way into people's hearts. A few days ago, Mr. Williams collapsed on stage in Detroit and quipped to his fans as he recovered, "That's a nice way to die." He returned home to New York, but his condition worsened, and he has left us at the age of just 47. He was the first Negro to be a leading man on Broadway and in the pictures, and he will be the first Negro to be given a funeral at the Masonic Lodge in Manhattan. Some 5,000 mourners have filed past his casket. Olive Klein and Marguerite Dunlap singing Beautiful Ohio. Beautiful Ohio now has its first private radio station, WHK in Cleveland, which will broadcast Tuesday and Sunday concert series. WEAF, owned by the American Telephone and Telegraph Company, has gone on the air in New York with an opening broadcast featuring the aforementioned Madam Dunlap. Of an indoor thunderstorm? Well, that we can do. At the General Electric Laboratories in Schenectady, New York, the inventor Charles Steinmetz has succeeded in producing and controlling an indoor thunderstorm with the successful test of generators that can discharge over 100,000 volts of electricity at 10,000 amperes for 0.01 seconds. Those China boys. For 2 months, Chinese shipping workers in Hong Kong and Canton have been on strike because non-Chinese workers get paid significantly more. The strike is now over. Shipping companies have agreed to increase the China boys' wages by up to 30%. In South Africa, white miners are calling for a general strike after their employers announced they would be opening semi-skilled jobs to non-Europeans, that's to say black and Asiatic workers. In sports news, the baseball player Babe Ruth has signed a new 3-year contract with the New York Yankees, providing a base salary of $50,000 per year, plus a bonus of $500 for every home run he hits. Contract negotiations came down to the flip of a coin by Yankees co-owner Tillinghast Houston. If Ruth won, he would get his demands. If not, he would have to settle for less. Babe yelled, "Tails!" And when the coin settled on Colonel Houston's carpet, tails it was. America's most famous sharpshooter has still got it at the age of 61. Annie Oakley has just shot a record 98 out of 100 clay targets from a distance of 16 yards. There will be no such triumphs in old age for the Spanish footballer Pichichi. He is dead of typhus at 29. Nor for the French tennis player William Laurence, who won the World Hardcourt Championships a year and a half ago. He is dead of septicemia brought on by influenza. The Norwegian freighter Grundtoft was carrying cargo from Galveston, Texas to Esbjerg in Denmark when it foundered in a North Atlantic storm about 500 miles southeast of Nova Scotia. The steamship Estonia raced to the scene but found no trace of the vessel. The last message from the telegraph operator read, "The boats are smashed and some of the men were swept overboard. We are almost awash now. I may be driven out any minute. Hurry, you may not hear from me again. All 25 men are lost."
Bride, so hear my plea.
The breezes blow across the Atlantic too. A hurricane has swept the coast of England, and winds of 108 miles per hour have been recorded in the Scilly Isles near Cornwall. Harry Keller was the man Houdini called America's greatest magician. He thrilled 19th century audiences with such feats as the levitation of Princess Karnak and his eerie self-decapitation, in which his severed head would leave his body and float around the stage. Perhaps it will do so again now that Mr. Keller is dead at 72. Charles Robinson Rockwood was a descendant of John Robinson of the Mayflower, who, like his forebear, established new colonies, this time on the far side of the American continent. A civil engineer and irrigation specialist, he designed the canal system that enabled development in the Colorado Desert of Southern California and transformed it into what is now known as the Imperial Valley. He is dead at 61. Have you had crab meat Remick at the Plaza Hotel in Manhattan? It was named for William Remick, then president of the New York Stock Exchange. Mr. Remick is dead at the age of 55. Lady Hope was an evangelist and very active in the temperance movement. However, she is better known for her claim at a Bible conference in Massachusetts 6 years ago that she had visited Charles Darwin on his deathbed and that he had told her he regretted ever publishing his work on the origin of species. "I was a young man with unformed ideas," he supposedly said. "To my astonishment, the ideas took like wildfire. People made a religion of them." Mr. Darwin's children furiously denied Lady Hope's account and dismissed it as a complete fabrication. Lady Hope is dead at 79. Your World News Update. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues. Giovanni Giriati, a fascist member of the Italian Chamber of Deputies, has resigned from Parliament and confirmed rumours that he plans to become the new president of the Free State of Fiume and get it annexed by the Kingdom of Italy. The German Interior Minister, Adolf Köster, has ordered the removal of all images of the former Kaiser, Wilhelm II, from public buildings, as well as the removal of all other monarchical emblems. The French Red Cross and the Soviet government have come to an agreement in Berlin to help fight the Russian famine. This is the first contract ever signed between a French entity and the Bolsheviks. At the invitation of Mr. Lenin himself, three Soviet republics, Armenia, Azerbaijan, and Georgia, have come together to form the Federative Union of Soviet Socialist Republics of Transcaucasia. The capital will be at Tiflis, and executive authority will be wielded by a joint council comprising the party chiefs of each of the three republics. The world has a new king following last month's British declaration that Egypt is now a sovereign state. Ahmed Fuad Pasha has upgraded himself from sultan to king in a ceremony accompanied by the firing of salvos of 100 guns in Cairo, Alexandria, and Port Said, and of 21 guns in all the other provincial capitals. In India, His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales has opened a new military college in Dehradun in the Doon Valley. The Prince of Wales Royal Military College is intended to be a feeder school for the Indian officer class to the Royal Military Academy at Sandhurst. Following his arrest for sedition, Mr. Gandhi has declined to present any legal defense and is saying he will plead guilty to the charges against him. That would mean he would receive the minimum sentence of 6 years imprisonment, which is said to be making some government officials somewhat nervous. Turbulence elsewhere in His Majesty's dominions in the South African miners' strike. There has been looting, fighting and sabotage. But then 27 policemen were taken hostage at Newlands and another 9 special constables hired to protect the mines were shot and killed. So martial law was proclaimed in Johannesburg. Immediately afterwards, 100 striking gold miners were killed in the Witwatersrand region. In the city of Benoni, a South African army pilot dropped bombs on the trades hall during a meeting of strikers. Back in Johannesburg, another 19 police and 13 strikers were killed in fighting. A bullet was fired into the motor car of Prime Minister Smuts, but he escaped injury. And then the tide turned in the government's favour. Some 2,200 rebels were captured, and after an hour and quarter of continuous bombardment, the remainder surrendered to troops in Fordsburg. The South African rebellion is now over.
Pull that car out of Ireland, let their happy feelings flow like the old river channels flowing free.
From a turbulent dominion to its newest cousin in Ireland, the former so-called president, Eamon de Valera, has announced the formation of a new political party, the Cumann na Poblachtste, which means the Society of the Republic. The party's goal is to destroy the Anglo-Irish Agreement and the new Irish Free State, and as the name suggests, make Ireland a republic entirely free of Great Britain. Mr. De Valera will not want for supporters in Galway. A quartet of armed men invaded the St. Bride's Home Hospital, where 3 officers of the Royal Irish Constabulary were in bed recovering from their wounds in earlier incidents. All 3 were shot dead. More trouble among His Majesty's restive subjects. In Kenya, the anti-colonialist agitator Harry Tuku has been arrested for his activities in his East African Association. In the colony's capital of Nairobi, a crowd of more than 7,000 surrounded the police station in which he is being detained, and at least 21 protesters have been killed by police. There are no monkeys or chimps in New York's sensational hit play The Hairy Ape. Only a solitary gorilla who shows up somewhat late in the drama. More broadly, the title refers to the bestial human protagonist, Yank, who stokes the engines on an ocean liner but feels increasingly alienated in a world controlled by the rich. The new play is by Eugene O'Neill, son of the great actor James O'Neill, and his wife Ella, whose death we reported on last month. Louis Bacalter has been released from Sing Sing, the New York State Penitentiary, after completing 26 months of a 30-month sentence for burglary, and is rumoured already to have teamed up with mobster Jacob Shapiro to begin a takeover of labour unions in New York City's garment district. Fatty Arbuckle has been tried twice for murder, and each time the jury failed to convict. But in the 7 months since his notorious San Francisco Disco Party and the Death of Virginia Rap. Mr. Arbuckle's pictures have been banned across America, and the newspapers have given their readers a diet of horror stories of Hollywood orgies and other depravities. So a third trial is now underway, and this time Mr. Arbuckle's lawyers are said to be taking no chances and are going for a take-no-prisoner strategy that will destroy the state's witnesses and its evidence.
Love her by radio. You will find it radio.
You can now love her by radio all over the map. The first radio stations in Colorado, Texas, West Virginia, Georgia, and Oregon have gone on the air. In Denver, Doc Reynolds, owner of KLZ, has erected two 80-foot towers in the garden of his house, and he and his wife are broadcasting from a spare room a menu that includes news, music played by Mrs. Reynolds on piano and the Doctor on saxophone and violin, a bedtime story for children, and a Sunday sermon. In Dallas, WRR broadcasts police reports from the second floor of the firehouse, and via telephone line to the First Baptist Church, the Reverend George Washington Truett's Sunday service. In Georgia, the Atlanta Journal and the Atlanta Constitution now have their own radio stations, but the Journal was first on air by 2 days with their station WSB. Those call letters were randomly assigned by the government, but the Journal is insisting they stand for Welcome South, Brother. Radio is all very well, but what if you could see all the announcers and sopranos? Charles Jenkins has created something called a televisor and filed a patent application for an apparatus that, quote, transmits pictures by wireless.
Oh, the moonlight fell tonight along the Wabash. From the field where comes the breath of Gilmore hay. Through the sycamores, the candlelight are gleaming on the banks of the Wabash.
Indianapolis has been hosting the United States' first ever National College Basketball Championship. Five regional champions and one runner-up have participated, and the winner is Wabash College from the Indiana Intercollegiate Athletic Association. Gordon Morton McGregor was born in Walkerville, Ontario, just across the river from Detroit, Michigan. He inherited a wagon-making company from his father, but decided the future lay in motorized wagons, and did a deal with a chap across the border called Henry Ford. The result was the first Canadian mass-produced automobile, the 1904 Ford Model C. The deal he struck with Mr. Ford was very advantageous. It gave him exclusive rights to sell Ford products throughout the entire British Empire, except the British Isles. And so the Ford Motor Companies in Australia, New Zealand and South Africa are all wholly owned subsidiaries of Mr. McGregor's Canadian company. It was another mode of transport that brought an end to a spectacular career. He has died at the Royal Victoria Hospital in Montreal from intestinal problems arising from an old railway injury. Gordon Morton McGregor was 49. Do you remember Move 'Em Up Joe? That was Joe Gerhardt, one of the best of all defensive second basemen in the history of Major League Baseball. He used to shout, "Move 'em up from the baseline," when his teammates were on base. Move 'em up Joe has now himself moved up. He had been working as a salesman in a cigar store in Middletown, New York, and was felled by a massive heart attack outside the Middletown post office. With reference to that continual invocation to move base runners forward, the sports writer John M. Foster called Mr. Gerhardt the original inventor of the sacrifice theory in baseball. He is dead at 67. Hugh Mangum was a photographer and he operated a racially unsegregated photographic studio, not easy to do, in Wilmington, North Carolina, especially after the so-called insurrection of 1898. He is dead of pneumonia at the age of 44. Lewis Porter Featherston ran for Congress as a Labour Party candidate in Arkansas. His Democrat opponent was declared the winner, but Mr. Featherston challenged the result on the grounds of election fraud and was seated by the U.S. House of Representatives. He is dead at 70. Henry Otto Wicks was a portraitist and landscape painter. He was born in Germany, but emigrated to the United States and especially loved Hawaii. But the failure of his marriage depressed him, and he has committed suicide at the age of 55. H. Irving Hancock was a chemist, but is better known for his various fictional adventures for boys, including the four-book series The Invasion of the United States, in which the Kaiser's army succeeds in occupying New England and New York. The series' appearance in 1916 is said to have played a key role in persuading the American public to get involved in the World War. Mr. Hancock is dead at 54 of liver failure. Your World News Update. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues. Following the coup in the Free State of Fiume and the installation of Fascist Party member Giovanni Girardi, the Kingdom of Italy has sent troops to occupy the no longer quite so free state of Fiume. Finland, Poland, Estonia and Latvia have signed the Warsaw Accord, committing themselves to respect each other's sovereignty and to guarantee that each will respect the right of the other three minorities living within their borders. Finland has also resolved its border dispute with Bolshevik Russia. The new agreement permits Karelian refugees from the Karelia Soviet Socialist Republic to cross into Finland's Karjala provinces for the next 3 months.
The morning we danced the whole night through, and the daylight soon will be dawning. Just one more waltz with you, that melody so entrancing seems to be made for us two. I could just keep right on dancing forever, dear, with you.
It's 3 o'clock in the morning, and after an all-night session in Paris, the Allied Commission on Reparations has called on the German government to limit the amount of paper money it's printing as the Deutschmark continues to deteriorate. The Allies point out that they are still owed 470 million gold marks, as well as 1.45 billion gold marks worth of material resources. The Commission has given Berlin until May the 31st to comply, or they will take additional action under the Treaty of Versailles. In India, at Ahmedabad, following his decision to plead guilty to sedition, Mr. Gandhi has been sentenced to 6 years in jail. In Ireland, Republican revolutionary Rory O'Connor stunned attendees at a press conference when he said that the Irish Republican Army would no longer submit to the Dáil Éireann, the so-called Parliament of the so-called Irish Republic, because by voting to support the Irish Free State, the members had abandoned the Republic. When asked if that meant the IRA would now be setting up a military dictatorship, Mr. O'Connor replied, "You can take it that way if you like." In the United States, 15 Customs Service special agents have made one of the great busts of this Prohibition era, seizing the cargo of the two-masted schooner Clara in the East River as well-dressed men wearing diamonds were unloading 4,000 cases of Scotch whiskey in the Bronx. The customs agents fought a fierce gun battle but ultimately prevailed to arrest 20 rum runners and seize a cargo of 48,000 bottles of scotch valued at $500,000. Are you familiar with aircraft carriers? They're basically floating airfields. The Japanese ship Wakamiya gave us the first naval-launched air raid in the late war. The Royal Navy quickly followed. Now America has its first aircraft carrier, the USS Langley, converted from the Collier USS Jupiter.
We'll be over, we're coming over, and we won't come back till it's over over there.
Back on dry land, President Harding has ordered the withdrawal of the remaining 4,000 US troops in Germany by July the 1st. It's over over there, and they'll be back for the glorious 4th.
I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree. A tree whose hungry mouth is pressed upon the earth's glowing breast.
The only thing lovelier than a tree is more trees. So President Harding has also signed into law the General Land Exchange Act, providing for the United States Forest Service to expand the contiguous area of existing national forests by allowing the federal agency to exchange holdings of equal value to acquire privately owned lands within the boundaries of a forest. Congressman Martin Ansorge, a Republican from New York, has nominated a Negro student to the United States Naval Academy in Annapolis. There were three black midshipmen at the academy in the 1870s, but none since, and it is not clear whether Emil Treville Holly will be accepted in Annapolis. Officers and midshipmen have told the New York Times that, quote, the fate that awaits the candidate is social ostracism, and that it is safe to say that the midshipmen have condemned him to Coventry. Anchors away, the Negroes no way. Do you know what a bar mitzvah is? It's a Jewish coming of age ritual for boys. But what if you're a girl? Well, the Society for the Advancement of Judaism has just witnessed the first ever bat mitzvah in the United States. That's a bar mitzvah for girls. In this case, Judith Kaplan, the 12-year-old daughter of Rabbi Kaplan. John L. Lewis, president of the United Mine Workers of America, has announced the strike of all his union's coal miners in the United States and Canada starting at midnight on March the 31st. Mr. Lewis promises, quote, this will be the greatest strike in the history of the coal industry. The governor of Oklahoma, J.B.A. Robertson, has been arrested at his home. He is indicted on charges of accepting a bribe from the Guarantee State Bank of Okmulgee in order to permit the insolvent bank to keep operating. Do you like the comics in your daily paper? Well, there's a new one called Out Our Way, written and drawn by J.R. Williams. You can find it in the Brooklyn Citizen, the Miami News, and several other newspapers. It's described as a daily bit of entertaining, homely humor about the kind of people we all know. Don't miss it.
Love her by radio. You will find it radio.
You can now love her by radio in Philadelphia. WIP, owned by Gimbel's Department Store, is offering a service of news and songs from the city's favorite soprano, Mae Farley. And Maryland, Tennessee, and Kansas now also have their first licensed radio stations in Baltimore, Memphis, and Wichita. Franz Heiler has become the first pilot to land an aeroplane on Germany's highest mountain, Zugspitze, Herr Heiler's Rumpler CI touched down on the Schneeferner Glacier, 500 yards from the summit. Perhaps less glamorously, Lawrence Sperry has become the first pilot to land an aeroplane at the United States Capitol. His small scout plane touched down on the concrete plaza in front of the Congressional Building and rolled up the steps in order to stop, because Mr. Sperry's plane has no brakes. All the passengers on a U.S. airliner survived the crash when their seaplane Miss Miami plunged into the water during a flight from Miami to the Bahamas, but all five of them died over the next 3 days as they drifted at sea and faded one by one. It is the deadliest civilian airplane accident in the history of American aviation. The Royal Navy submarine H-42 has been lost after it made the fatal mistake of surfacing straight into the path of the destroyer HMS Versatile. Both vessels were taking part in training manoeuvres off Gibraltar when the submarine surfaced directly in front of the Versatile as it was travelling at 20 knots an hour. The bow of the destroyer rammed the conning tower of the submarine head-on, and all 24 men are dead. If you're a scientist at the Buenos Aires Zoo, better put down your little Rose of Argentine for a moment and attend to bigger game. A party of explorers has been dispatched by the zoo on an expedition to Patagonia, where a large and mysterious creature has been seen in a lake in the Chubut province. Reporters describe it variously as a Plesiosaurus, a Glyptodon, or a Megatherium, and the group has been given 6 weeks either to capture or to destroy the, quote, anachronistic creature. Are you familiar with Buddhism? It's proving increasingly appealing thanks to Kazi Dawa Samdup, the Tibetan linguist who was first to translate the key texts of Buddhism into English and thus introduced the religion to America and the British Empire. Mr. Samdup also served as translator for Sir Charles Bell at the historic Simla Convention on the Indo-Tibet border. He is dead at the age of 53. Max von Hausen was the commander of the German Empire's Third Army during the early months of the World War and a cold and merciless invader. In the Battle of Dinant, his troops executed 600 inhabitants of that Belgian town, including many women and children, one only 3 weeks old. He was personally responsible for the decision to destroy Reims, including its famous and now ruined cathedral. Asked what history would say about their actions, he replied, "We should write history ourselves." Max von Hausen is dead at 75. Your world news update. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues for its entire 18-month existence. Following Poland's invasion of Lithuania, the Republic of Central Lithuania, centered around the ancient capital of Vilnius, has been seen as a Polish puppet state. It is no longer. The so-called republic has been annexed by Poland and incorporated into the Wilno Voivodeship. Much to the dislike of Berlin, the Saarland was carved out of Prussia and Bavaria and under the Treaty of Versailles handed to France and Britain as a League of Nations mandate. The lucrative coal mines were ceded to Paris. The mandate issues its own postage stamps and has its own currency, the Saar franc. Nevertheless, it is unusual in the heart of Europe to have a state that has no democratic accountability whatsoever. Now the ruling Regierungs Commission, colloquially known as the RICO, under its French chairman, Monsieur Rau, has created a 30-member regional council of resident Germans that will consult with the French and British occupiers. Elections are planned for later this year. In news from other League of Nations mandates, London has told its sheikh in the Mesopotamian desert, "You'll rule this land with me." The young King Faisal of Iraq has signed a military agreement with London, giving Britain full control over the territory's defences. The Allied powers have agreed to amend the Treaty of Sèvres in an attempt to end the Greco-Turkish war, but Turkish nationalists are refusing to sign any armistice until Greece withdraws all its forces from Anatolia. In the Russian civil war, troops of the anti-Bolshevik Yakut People's Army have seized the Siberian city of Yakutsk. Pavel Milyukov served as Russia's foreign minister for 2.5 turbulent months in the spring of 1917. He was giving a speech in Berlin to fellow Russians who left their homeland after the Bolshevik Revolution. Two men approached the stage singing the old Tsarist national anthem and then opened fire on Mr. Milyukov. Another former government official from that brief interlude between Tsars and communists, Vladimir Nabokov, attempted to wrestle the gun away from the assassin, but instead took two bullets himself and died at the scene. Mr. Nabokov leaves a widow and five children, the oldest of whom, also called Vladimir Nabokov, is said to be a promising writer and also gives tennis and boxing lessons. Also in news of failed assassination, in Shanghai, two Koreans attempted to execute General Baron Tanaka Gishi, the former Japanese Minister of War, as he was disembarking from a ship. They missed and killed an American woman instead.
Oh, that car out of Ireland let their happy feelings flow, like the old river channels flowing free. Start the Shandon bells a-ringing, let the angels see the glow of the emerald on the finger of the sea. Every mother's son will listen, every Irish heart will know that we've realized our dreams of long ago. Just to prove you love your Ireland,
peace hold in Ireland? There are those who think not. The printing press of the Freeman's Journal has been destroyed by men of the Irish Republican Army because of that newspaper's support of the incoming Irish Free State. Far worse things have happened in recent days. Two policemen were killed by IRA men in Northern Ireland, and in reprisal, the following day, eight Catholics were shot at the home of Owen McMahon in Belfast. Six are dead, Mr. McMahon, four of his sons and an employee. Nevertheless, under the auspices of Mr. Winston Churchill, Secretary of State for the Colonies, representatives of the government in London, the government of Northern Ireland, the government of the Irish Free State and the Irish Republican Army have all signed an agreement consenting to a halt to all hostilities. And the Irish Free State Act has been given royal assent by the King, providing for the dissolution of the Parliament of Southern Ireland and new elections for the Irish Free State Legislature, and also giving Northern Ireland a month to decide whether it wishes to opt out of the new Irish state. The United States Senate has voted unanimously, 75-0, to ratify a treaty banning the use of poison gas in warfare, as well as the use of submarines in warfare. They have also voted unanimously to approve the nine-power treaty respecting the sovereignty and territorial integrity of China. On the vote to approve the Washington Naval Treaty restricting warship construction, there was one no vote from Senator France of Maryland. The so-called four-power treaty between the US, Great Britain, France and Japan was approved far more narrowly, with only 12 of the Senate's 35 Democrats in favour. One man who will not be joining those Senate Democrats is Lucien W. Parrish, U.S. Representative for the 13th District of Texas. He was campaigning for the Democrat nomination for senator and en route to Roby in Fisher County to give a speech when his automobile plunged off a bridge. He survived the accident with skull injuries and a broken jaw, but while convalescing in hospital at Wichita Falls, contracted cerebral meningitis and is dead at 44.
Cigarette, cigarette, you are warmer and truer than any bond would I've missed. And your rapture seems to kindle and capture the coldest hearted.
What woman does not know the rapture of a cigarette? But that could prove expensive in New York. The city's police commissioner, Richard Enright, is enforcing a new ordinance prohibiting women, but not men, from smoking in public. Commissioner Enright has directed police to issue fines of $5 per cigarette where the fairer sex is caught enjoying a smoke at a restaurant or hotel. The chairman of the Board of Aldermen says he is unaware of any such ordinance, supposedly passed earlier this month. How would you like a day off on Saturday? Sounds crazy, right? But Edsel Ford, president of the Ford Motor Company, has announced that his company will be the first to move permanently to a 40-hour work week, Monday to Friday. And then you can feel free to gamble and frolic for two full days of your own. Every man needs more than one day a week for rest and recreation, says Mr. Ford. The Ford Company always has sought to promote ideal home life for its employees. We believe that in order to live properly, every man should have more time to spend with his family. We note, however, that the entry-level wage remains unchanged at $6 per day, so the five-day week means that workers will be taking home a sixth less in wages. The U.S. Supreme Court has issued its ruling in United Zinc and Chemical Company versus Brit, and in so doing has modified the attractive nuisance doctrine that has held at common law for eight decades. Under that legal doctrine, a property owner is responsible for the injuries of a trespassing child if the cause of injury is something that could reasonably have been expected to attract a child into coming onto the property. However, in a 6-3 decision, the court now rules that the defendant is not liable if the child comes onto the property without being aware of the seductive cause of his injury. In this case, from 1916, two boys aged 8 and 11 died after their discovery of a large pool of contaminated water, which was not visible at all from the perimeter of the property.
Love her by radio. You will find it radio. If you want
long to reach your heart's desire. You won't have to send her word by wire. You never buy her love her by radio.
Louisiana has become the latest state in which you can love her by radio. The first licensed radio station, WWL, has begun broadcasting from New Orleans with a piano recital. Unlike other stations, this one had to get permission not just from the government, but from the Vatican, because it is run by Jesuit priests from Loyola University. In sports news, the 81st Grand National at Aintree has been won by Music Hall, ridden by Lewis Reese. His brother Fred won last year's race. In the Stanley Cup, the Toronto St. Pats have beaten the Vancouver Millionaires 5-1 to take Lord Stanley's famous trophy 3-2. We reported last month on the legal travails of the celebrated New York boxing promoter Tex Rickard, charged with abducting and sexually assaulting 4 minors. In the first trial, a jury has acquitted him of assaulting and abducting a 15-year-old girl. The district attorney's office has now dropped the 3 other cases.
Some sunny day, with a smile on my face, I'll go back to that place for a while.
Boy, that was Some Sunny Day on March 28th, an annular solar eclipse in which the sun appears as a thin gold ring, was visible throughout British and French West Africa and all the way to Arabia. Sir John Craig Eaton inherited Toronto's famous department store from his father, Timothy, and expanded it nationwide to the point that a small railway town in Saskatchewan was named in his honour, Etonia. The Winnipeg, Toronto and Montreal stores are said to have revolutionised department store retailing throughout North America. On a typical day, 1 in 10 Winnipeggers visits Eaton's, and the company proudly promotes itself as the largest retail organization in the British Empire. Alas, Sir John is dead of pneumonia, contracted after a bad bout of influenza at the age of 45. And that's the way of the world, March 1922.
100 years from today, 100 years from today.
The 100 Years Ago Show is a production of Markstein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.